Today is Wednesday, March 27th, 2024. This is Quick Start from CBN News. I'm Dan Andros. The latest on the Baltimore Bridge collapse. We'll have that top story and more on today's podcast, where we bring you news from a Christian perspective. Don't forget to subscribe and leave a rating. And you can email us if you'd love to chime in or say hello. QuickStartPodcast@CBN.org. Joining me now to get through the news of the Cray, Billy Hallowell. And as always, a lot to get to. The focus story today, Billy, we've got a Gold Star parent who's speaking out about the lack of communication coming from the White House.
Yeah, we had Christy Shamblin on. Her daughter-in-law was one of the 13 American service members killed in Afghanistan during the pullout, and she had plenty to say. We'll dig into all of that and why she's speaking out in the first place.
Yeah, she was at the State of the Union address as well, right?
She was. Yep, she was there, and she's been at the hearings as well on the Afghan pullout. So she's been pretty much in the know throughout this entire ordeal.
All right, looking forward to the details there. On the main thing, Trey caught up with Luke Smallbone, one half of the Christian music duo for King and Country. Portion of that conversation coming up on the main thing. And don't forget to subscribe to all of our CBN News podcasts, DC Debrief with John Stolness, new episodes every Friday, rounding up everything going on in Washington, D.C., and Newsmakers with Billy, a full-length interview each and every weekday. Make sure you subscribe so you don't miss a beat there. All right, time for the news here in 90 seconds. And according to officials, six people remain missing following the collapse of Baltimore's Francis Scott Key Bridge. This happened after a cargo ship collided with the bridge early yesterday morning. Eight people were reportedly on the structure at the time. Fortunately, two of them were rescued from the water not long after the collapse. The NTSB said during a briefing that the investigation is still in the early stages, with everything being thoroughly examined, including the ship's recorder and maintenance history. Maryland Governor Wes Moore said the ship's crew issued a distress call before the collision of the bridge, which was caught on dramatic video. And Hamas is not the only terror group that uses human shields. Hezbollah is using similar tactics in its attacks on northern Israel. Evidence gathered by CBN's George Thomas in southern Lebanon shows weapons have been hidden in densely populated areas, hoping Israel hits back at those locations. Worse yet, the terrorist group is using Christian farms in southern Lebanon to target Israel. You can see George's report by following the link in today's podcast episode description. And former Major League Baseball star Daryl Strawberry sent a positive message of thanks to his fans for their kindness and prayers as he has been recovering from a heart attack 2 weeks ago. Those are just some of today's top headlines. You can check out those stories and more at cbnnews.com. Great to see Daryl Strawberry on the mend. You know, I interviewed him a few years ago, Billy. I know you're not a huge sports fan, but I was a big New York Mets fan growing up. And so in the 80s, when I was younger, and the Mets were amazing at that time in the World Series. Daryl Strawberry, one of those key players there, incredible career. But when I interviewed him, I was surprised at how solid he is, because he had a tumultuous journey in his younger years. And man, what a strong guy of faith there, a strong Christian. He and his wife, talking to them, just really great to see. And I remember one of the things that I thought was funny is we were talking about, at that time, I happened to talk to him. Some other mainstream media, like CBS or somebody, did a big profile on him, and they were at his house, and he had kind of like all of his trophies and stuff shoved into like a room where it wasn't a big deal. Like they'd just kind of been put away, and the reporter couldn't believe this. And they kept asking like, why are these things like put away? And, you know, he was just trying to express how those sorts of things weren't that important to him anymore, and his faith. And I think he's a pastor now, or at least was for a while. And so that was what was more important to him. And this reporter just couldn't wrap his mind around that.
Yeah. No, he's had an incredible journey. And I think it's hard not to follow it, whether you're a huge sports fan or not. But, you know, the idea that you wouldn't have all these awards out honoring yourself and that you'd honor something bigger, I think that's countercultural, right? So it's just kind of funny. You know, and I think it speaks, though, to who he is, clearly.
Yeah.
Right? It's not just words, but it's actions. And not that it's, look, if you want to put your words out, that's fine. But I think in his case, it shows a level of humility, especially in light of who he was on the field.
What do you make as well, Billy, about this bridge collapse? I mean, this, I don't know if you've seen the video, it's shocking. And I'm watching, and one of the things that struck me as I watched the video is, you know, you see this, it's kind of in time lapse, so it's speeding up, but this boat starts veering out of control, but people are on the bridge. There were several cars and trucks that drove by just moments before this thing hit. And that just struck me as, wow, I wonder what those people are thinking today. But man, what a horrific scene.
Well, it's a horrific scene. A lot of people to pray for, obviously, those impacted. But then it's also a lot of people's worst nightmare, right? I mean, this is one of those things that you think about all the time. You're like, that would never happen. And, you know, it's just so shocking to watch something, this big metal structure, go down like a pile of sticks. I mean, it just like went down so easily and quickly. And I think obviously there's a shocking nature of that and the questions that have to be asked and the, you know, all the prayer we need to put out there. But I think then also just sort of pondering, you know, life is short and it can change in any moment. And I think an event like this shows us that for those people, especially who just went over the bridge or were approaching it, you know, I would imagine a lot of them are thinking that today as well.
Yeah, indeed. And look, I may be just be as a product of being in the news and reading the news every day and seeing always the craziest things that go on. Anytime I go over a big bridge like that, this is really sad. And then I don't know, maybe I'm alone on this. Am I the only person that does this? But a lot of times I just think about, all right, if the car flew into the water somehow, how are we all getting out? How am I getting all the kids out? How am I... I don't know why I'm like thinking of the escape routes, but it's probably because I've read too many news stories. But and maybe, I mean, email me if I'm not, let me know if you do this as well, so I at least don't feel alone. But I do. I think about the exit routes and, you know, what if this goes wrong and that goes wrong. So look, I realize I'm a little out there, but you never know. If you're the same, go ahead, email us quickstartpodcast@cbn.org. But let's move on now to the focus story. And as we were mentioning there at the top, Bill, you caught up with Christy Shamblin, whose daughter-in-law was one of the 13 American service members killed in Afghanistan at that horrible suicide bombing. They're speaking out now. So what's the story?
Yeah, Christy Shamblin's been very vocal. Her daughter-in-law is Marine Sergeant Nicole G. She was one of the 13, as you said, American service members who were killed in that ISIS-K terror attack back in August of 2021 during that chaotic pullout from Afghanistan. And, you know, the first thing, whenever you have a story like this, we want to make sure, and people can actually watch this interview over on our YouTube page, but we wanted to make sure that Christy was able to talk a little bit about Nicole so we could get a sense of who she was, because that gets lost in these stories. And so, you know, we were able to learn about this fallen Marine, that she was really just a light to so many people. Her mother-in-law said that really with the loss of their daughter-in-law, that their entire lives have changed, that they will never be the same people again. She talked about how proud Nicole was to serve her country. And so you can see some of that. But really, she talked a lot about navigating this pain that they have and how dynamic and amazing her daughter-in-law was and how positive she was. And so she has really picked up the mantle, though, as of some of the other families, of asking tough questions, right, about what happened that day. And not just that day, but throughout the entire pullout, why it was so chaotic, why there were 13 deaths of service members. And, you know, she asked a lot of those questions in our interview. We've seen her do that again and again, showing up in different media outlets, even on CNN recently, where she made headlines. And so, you know, the other thing that really she drove home that I thought was important was the fact that Nicole and the other service members, they really knew that they were saving lives. They were proud to be doing what they were doing over there. And that Christy and the family was proud. You know, it's bittersweet, but they were proud of her. You know, so just a lot to unpack there. Very emotional interview.
Yeah, and we'll put that interview that you had in the link here to this podcast episode so you can check it out. And on the image we used for that video, speaking to your point about them caring for the people there, it's of her holding a baby. You remember at that time, it was so crazy because of the pullout. People were so afraid of what was going to happen and what actually has happened, the Taliban just taking back over. people were giving their children over to the American soldiers on the other side of the fence. They couldn't get over. I mean, could you imagine the level of desperation to take your child, a baby, and give it to someone else because your situation is so bad, or it looks like it's going to be so bad, that you it's the better option to give your child away. This is the level of fear that these people had. And look, it was justified fear, as we've seen what's happened in the days since, and weeks and months and years since. So what's her claim, though, about the White House and Biden?
Yeah, you know, so we talked about the fact she was at the State of the Union, as we mentioned at the top of the show. She called it disheartening and predictable, the speech. Obviously, Afghanistan was not talked about, you know, during that speech, yet there were numerous people, the other parent who yelled out, obviously, during the speech, and again, had a child who died in service during the pullout. But she said she has pretty low expectations, so she was not surprised. She then went on to say that the speech itself did not flow together, that Biden, in her view, is not relevant. He's not speaking about the things that Americans are caring about, that he's disconnected. So she had a lot to say. And part of the reason she's saying this is because the claim, to your question, that she has made is that they have not been reached out to by the White House, by the president. There has been only one interaction, and that was 3 days at Dover Air Force Base, 3 days after the bombing, when Nicole died and the bodies were received. Biden showed up to Dover Air Force Base. That was the only time she interacted with him, and we can get into some of that, but the interaction was not favorable. None of the family, most of the families we heard from, it said very unfavorable things about their interactions with Biden. But you know, Christy, because she has these questions, they have reached out to the White House. They have tried to implement, or rather initiate contact, and have gotten nowhere doing that. So it's a little disturbing that you would be a family member of one of the 13 service members who gave their life for their country, and they're not getting responses from their own government. So that, you know, really stuck out to me. And she was very clear that that was something that has been a little shocking to them.
Yeah. And you might remember, as Billy's talking about the details and that interaction with Biden shortly after these servicemen and women were killed, there was a viral moment. It was Biden looking at his watch during that ceremony, right? Wasn't that the watch ceremony that time on the tarmac? And he's supposed to be honoring these people as they are brought home. And he's caught on video looking at his watch. I mean, maybe it was a habit or whatever, but it was just terrible optics. It just made it look like, well, what time are we getting out of here? I mean, that's just how it was perceived. Unfortunate. Yeah. And so, of course, that's some of the quote-unquote behavior that I believe she's referencing there. So why do you think this story matters, Billy? I mean, we had the State of the Union. People are frustrated about this. This happened in 2021. What do you think is the main thing for this now?
Well, this is why it matters, right? And I just want to add to what you just said. You know, the families have been very clear. It's not just Christy, the other families who were there, the watch incident that you just mentioned. One parent called it beyond disgusting. That was the response to the him looking at his watch over and over again, and making it about his own son and his experience, which I'm sure he was trying to relate to them. But some people might say, well, they're just, you know, these families are still complaining, and it's because they're facing pain, and that's all that's rooted in it. But Christy was very clear that the questions they have are very pointed questions. They want to understand why the government, why the Biden administration is calling this a successful endeavor, right? When we had these deaths, when we've seen what has happened to Afghanistan, why are they calling it successful? And beyond that, they want to understand, amid this confusion, how is the government going to prevent this from ever happening again to other families? They don't want the other families out there of service members to feel the pain that they feel. She said flat out, how do we make this never happen again? This was an evacuation. It was a peaceful evacuation. What went wrong? Nobody's finding out how to fix it next time. And I think that is what motivates her. You know, I asked her, why are you continuing to speak out? I am sure this is not easy. You know, when you put yourself out there the way that they have, people are going to have opinions. They're going to say things. And here's what she said, and this is important. Our kids were not afraid, and we're not going to be afraid. And we have each other. And that's the family that we've formed as Gold Star families. We have each other's back. So they very much are drawing from the courage that their children had serving, and they want to make sure they speak up to protect others.
Yeah. Amen to that. And look, this is one of those things that it's just the nature of the beast. The general mainstream media are not going to push for answers on this. They're just not. And so many people were let down on, I think of even all the people in our armed forces that served before in Afghanistan, anytime before, all the work they did, all the sacrifices they made on the battlefield to try to make Afghanistan a functioning democracy, right? Regardless of if you believe of why we went in there and that we should have gone in there, we went in there and our soldiers sacrificed that so that we could hopefully stabilize that country. And people were still there. Our troops were still there a long time after. And so politically, they got tired of it, even though it was relatively safe in most of those bases and whatnot. And then they have this dramatic pullout. And then it not only let down our servicemen and women, it also let down Afghans who were counting on us. And this is the sort of thing that it's going to just breed more frustration and anger against America because, I mean, you look at those interpreters who risked their lives. All those interpreters over there who were left out to dry after they clearly are risking their lives because the Taliban is going to come after them first and foremost as collaborators with the Western enemies. So a lot of people let down, and we need to be praying about that because obviously that decision has been made and that's done and the damage is done there. And so they're going to be living with the after effects for that for some time.
Got to be praying for Christy, her family, and others, and also that our government would have a plan, you know, not just when there's a pullout from a war, but when people are left in Haiti, when, I mean, all of these things that we're seeing where it appears that the greatest country, the most powerful country in the world, is ill-prepared to evacuate and properly close out commitments that we have made. That's troubling to me, regardless of who's in office. And so we need to do a better job and pray for our leaders in that respect.
Yep, 100%. Absolutely. Good story, Billy. Good interview as well. And again, you can check that out in the description here. We can follow the link to that full interview. I'd highly advise you to go ahead and check that one out. All right, we are going to head over to the main thing now. And Luke Smallbones, one half of the Christian music duo for King and Country. And he sat down with Trey to talk about his family story, what it's like out there on tour, and how he and his wife have prioritized the Lord and their marriage. That's today's main thing.
Luke Smallbone, thank you so much for being here. You know, y'all have a new movie coming out about your story, Unsung Hero.
Yeah.
What is it like to see your life story, your family's life story, put up on the big screen?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I view it a little bit as it's my parents' story. Yeah. You know, in some cases, this is...
It certainly impacted you, though, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I view it as my parents' story. And in some cases, yes. I wanted to do something... at the end of the day, the behind-the-scenes story is this. I've told my family story at pretty much every one of our concerts for, like, the last 12 years. And I've had all these people come up and say, man, Luke, you should write a book, you know? And and I'm like, man, I was homeschooled. I don't read or write very well, you know? So like, maybe we could make a movie. And so that's we'd written a song called Unsung Hero. Hmm. And I went to a producer friend of mine who we worked with on another film in 2016. And said, hey, man, you've kept coming to me saying you want to work on another project. I said, well, my parents' story is a really special story. Yeah. And I've told it for years, and people keep coming up to me and telling it, you know, speaking about it. And I said, what do you think of if we started putting it into development and just see where a script takes us? And that was about nearly 4 years ago now. And the thesis really behind this film and the reason why we made it is Mother Teresa says, if you want to change the world, go home and love your family. And I was the benefactor of my parents living out that statement. And I think that family is more important now than it ever has been in the history of the world.
Yeah,
I'm not sure we value it the way that we should. And we were actually just speaking off of camera about busyness and how you maintain these types of things. And to me, my hope is that people walk away from this film saying, I want to be a better dad. You know, I want to be a better mom. Or there's other characters in the film that really impacted us that were just neighbors. Maybe you're going to start to walk away and say, man, I want to be a better neighbor. I want to be someone who really contributes to my local community.
Yeah. You know, you talk about the importance of family and the role models that your parents were, and then even charting your own course now as a husband and as a father and also an artist, right? So you're traveling several times throughout the year and still maintaining those relationships with your family. And your wife has been open about some of the things that she's gone through. We've talked to her here at CBN about some of her journey. Talk a little bit about that, about leading your family, going through those things, and also maintaining your role as a recording artist.
Yeah. I think some people think that a good relationship is a relationship without struggle. I think some people think that a good family is a family without struggle. At the end of the day, I remember actually doing prep for marriage counseling when my wife and I were engaged, and they had like they rated your relationship and they gave it a score. It was a super intimidating process, right? And one of the things that came to reconciliation. Hmm. And we scored really well in this, you know, area of conflict resolution. And literally I went up to the people after and said, hey, thanks for, you know, investing in our marriage and, you know, or a marriage to be and our relationship and all that sort of stuff. And he said, well, you guys seem to be on the right, you know, path. Mm-hmm. And anyway, all that to say is they valued conflict resolution as basically one of the most important attributes in your relationship. Well, it's the same in your, obviously, in a marriage. It's the same in a friendship. It's the same in your family. And what I realized about being in a family, in a marriage, is when resolved conflict takes place, it breeds a stronger relationship. It breeds a stronger friendship. Hmm. And so, yeah, my family, you know, my wife and I, we've been through our fair share of things. But, man, I fiercely love my wife.
Yeah.
And a lot of that has to do with the fact that we've actually been through some things. We've lived out our vows in our 20s.
Yeah.
Not many people usually are saying, hey, you know, I've lived out my vows in my 20s. They usually think that's going to take place in their 60s and 80s.
Yeah.
But for us, you know, working through some of those things is given our relationship the ability to look back and say, hey, if we went through this, why can't we go through that?
Yeah.
And I think that that's been nothing but a good thing for us.
All right, Trey, thanks for that conversation there. Really appreciate it. The full interview will be forthcoming on CBN, the YouTube channel there. And we'll link that to you once it's made public. But appreciate that conversation. That's going to leave us with time here for one last thing on the podcast, Proverbs 16:24. Gracious words are like a honeycomb, sweetness to the soul and health to the body.
I love that. Yeah, gracious words. It's so easy to get frustrated and not offer gracious words. It's a good reminder, though, that, you know, that what we say has a major impact on other people's lives.
Yeah, it's amazing. You can literally see someone's soul come alive when you just give them some words of encouragement, some positive words. It's amazing how that works. So I've never been a big believer in the whole sticks and stones may break my bones, but names never hurt me. Words never hurt me. I think that's wrong. I think there's a lot of power in the tongue and what we say. So, all right. With that, we'll leave it there. Head on over to cbnnews.com for more news from a Christian perspective. Lord willing, and that creek don't rise on us. We'll see you back here tomorrow. God bless.